back of the dirty bookstore. A plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on the window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I went to the bank this morning, and the cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit, I took him up on what he said, and I stuck them stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. Into heaven anymore. Well, I got my window shields filled with flags I couldn't see, so I ran the car upside a curb right into a tree. By the time they got a doctor down, I was already dead, and I'll never understand why the man said. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. We're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven.
Woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. Him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I'm ready.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
Stocks, jocks, stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks and jocks with the chief.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland, Jimmy on the board. S&P futures up 60, NASDAQ futures up 350. This is really something.
I'm here too.
How are you, bud?
I'm just reading
this article here.
Absent for 3 weeks.
Now we got to get somebody to call in and say what about Biden? What about Pelosi? Trump bought as much as $5 million in Exxon stock before ICE saw a $220 million taser deal. Really?
Trump did himself, or
yeah. Well, I mean, his allegedly he doesn't look at it type thing. So he tells somebody else what the stuff is, and somebody else buys it or something. I don't know. There is no evidence Trump was involved in or had knowledge of the procurement process but Exxon knew about his stock purchase. But ethics experts say the timing alone raises red flags. Duh. Even as the White House has said, Trump's assets are in a trust managed by his children, his absolutely purer than Pharaoh's wife children. There are no conflicts of interest, just so you know. Just saying, you know.
Yeah, but his trust allows him to know what's going on. It's
I mean, it's I don't, I mean, if I had children that amoral, I would trust them to be amoral for me. Wouldn't you? Just saying. I know somebody's going to say,
I think it's,
how do you know anybody's
well
amoral? But
that his whole goal is to maximize Donald Trump's net worth, or the Trump family's net worth, before they leave office.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
And to put his name on as many things as possible. Anyway, we have a huge rally today, even though all weekend they've been bouncing back and forth on the Strait of Hormuz. I get the feeling, Jan and Jimmy, that the world has decided that despite the U.S. and Iran going back and forth on this deal, that 3 months from now there's going to be a deal. That's the feeling I get, that even though it seems like it's start, stop, they seem like they're moving towards something. Or am I just being too optimistic?
Well, I think that this is my opinion, and it's pretty that Trump has seen that this war is one of the factors that could cause them real damage in the midterms. They know they're going to, I mean, they probably will lose the House, but they could lose the Senate too. It's politically very unpopular, and he was led down the primrose path. You know, it was led by his nose, by Netanyahu. Everybody knows that, but. There's one thing I.
You know, Jen, I'm not sure they're going to. I'm not so sure they're going to lose the House. You think they would be? Go by individual races, and it's not all that obvious.
Well, I mean, I was just reading something. You're right. You know, Susan Collins is going to. You know, Graham Plattner is beating her by 2 or 3%. But the last election she had, she was losing by 3 to 4%, and she won by 9 points. So, yeah, I mean, there's validity in there too. The Democrats really, being a centrist Democrat or a centrist Republican, as probably most of us are, we don't have a lot of places to go because the party is just thinks that, the future is going to be democratic socialism, which it's not. And we've proven that before.
Well, we don't want to go there.
But, I mean, so to go back to your point, Tom, I don't know. I don't know. Odds are they will, but I think November is a long way away.
Well, yeah. I was listening to two guys yesterday on the way home with all the people driving by me at 100 miles an hour, and of course, never a policeman anywhere. Unless there's an accident, then they close their expressway and there's 40 policemen there for 5 hours doing God knows what. That's just me, I guess. So I'm listening to the two guys, and I don't know if they were senators or reps, but they were Republican. One Democrat, one Republican. So the Democrat was saying something about, everybody hates Congress and blah, 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 because they're not doing this and they should be doing something different. It was something. I don't know exactly what. Then the Republican guy gets on and says, well, the reason why people don't like anybody really at every level... The people should elect better people, and I think, there's a conclusion. Maybe as I'm not 25 anymore, I really get, I won't say pissed off because I can't do anything about it, but aggravated. Why they give people any kind of airtime? Say stuff like, if we just had a better primary education system, everything would be okay. What does that mean? What does that even mean? That is zero solution for anybody to do tomorrow. Yes, if everybody was more moral, we'd be better. Well, how are we going to get there? What's the point of saying, if everybody would just pay more attention when they voted, we wouldn't be here. What kind of solution is that? What is that? That's like saying if all of a sudden, if we all didn't have to poop anymore, everything would be better. Okay, what does that do for anybody? I mean, I like it when somebody like has some sort of a solution on something and not just pontificate some bullshit. I mean, why not just hook the guy and bleep that out of the conversation? You know, if we just would elect better people, everything would be okay. What does that mean to you?
Well, that's a very, I don't know. Yeah, it's
this guy's a senator, for God's sake.
Yeah, so nobody is vested in fixing the primary system, because everybody, I mean, we all know that the primary system that we currently have leads toward, you know, not a lot of centrists get, you know, make it in, right? So so that's why we have these swings to the left and swings to the right. And they spend most of their time. And the other party does everything they can to stop the party in power from getting anything done. Democrats are pretty effective at it, actually. And the Republicans are certainly effective at it. You know, Mitch McConnell was as good as they come. And, what is the solution? Is it having, what do they call it? It's just first past the gate? You know, don't have... You know, the primaries, what do they call that, Tom, when, you know, the prime, you know, it's the, like in California, where there's just the top two or three people.
Well, that's a whole different kind of system. That's if there's no party involved. It's like the mayor here.
No, but they have that in California.
You know, they have it here in a lot of, they have it here in some of the suburbs. They've had it in a while, for a long, long time. It kind of gets away from you running as a party, running as a person, even though everybody knows what your party is. Well, in Chicago, they allegedly are all Democrats, but I'm not so sure they all are. Everything's sort of in name only. But you know, I think the Constitution, I think, is weak in a couple of spots. Now, of course, I'm no constitutional scholar, but I think there's too much power in the executive branch. If the person decides to use it, like we have a guy that's doing it. I mean, it really isn't a check or balance of really any sort. A little bit, maybe. But I think the weakness there, I've read a few times, I'm not a big scholar in the Federalist Papers and stuff, was they knew the first president would be George Washington, and they thought every president was going to be George Washington. Well, it hasn't worked out that way. But, I mean, you can say what you want, and there'll be, you know, not just Republicans, but other people will say, I think the corporation, in one way, was the one of the single biggest and best inventions for prosperity and for growth. The idea that somebody could not have personal liability on something, unless it's fraud, of course, but not have personal liability on something. The corporations allowed an awful lot of the good that we see happen. Yet. And you can have some, and I'll use the term moron. You can have some moron tell me that in 1970 or 1776, people anticipated money flowing to districts outside of their own. Well, there was no corporation. And when I say the bad thing about the corporation is, if we're sitting there in our whatever outfits those guys used to wear in 1776, two things were pretty obvious. So there's no way these guys could have thought out of this, because I don't think they could have, let's put it that way. It's one man's opinion. When people get to be 45, 50, 55 years old in those days, I mean, 70 was an outlier. So there's no way they could have thought that with, you know, how many people were in the house? 435, I don't know how many there were at the time, how many states there were, but there's an awful lot of people in the House, and there's people in the Senate. That the idea for the three of us, even if we absolutely knew each other from different areas when we got there and wanted to somehow take control and buy out and corrupt other people, we didn't live long enough to do that. I mean, now a corporation, however, never dies. So the same corporation, Commonwealth Edison, that was paying people off in 1920 is still doing it. Where if it was a person, if it was John Lee who was 50 years old in 1920, I'm sorry, you're long gone, right? But a corporation is not. So there's no way some idiot can tell me that the people in 1776 sort of anticipated that. How could you? That somebody was going to invent something that never died. The other thing is, I don't care who you were, you could have been a Pony Express rider, been really tough from New Hampshire to somehow scoot down and affect some representative election in Carolina in 1790. I don't think it would be possible. So why would those guys even anticipate that could happen? Maybe the guy next door, but that's about it. So the idea that, you know, AIPAC or IBM or whoever it is pouring millions of dollars from their home in New York into a district in Minnesota, there is no way anybody could have anticipated that. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying the idea that the founding fathers figured this was okay, like the Supreme Court said, they're a bunch of morons. There's no way that those guys could have anticipated that. I don't think. If you would have told them about it and they would have said okay, they might have. But you can't tell me.
Yeah, well, I don't think, Tom, I there's no doubt. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, people in Vermont were throwing money into South Carolina. I mean, there's no doubt.
Well, how could you get there? Yeah. I mean, in 1790.
Yeah, do it and so forth. So, you know, how many times has the Constitution been amended?
Well, but I mean, it's never been, those kinds of things have never actually been looked at. You look at these things, and I pick out AIPAC because they're a huge contributor. But they were 50-50 here in Illinois. It wasn't like everybody. But the idea that one outfit like that can come up with more money than all the people in the district combined, or two or three outfits, I don't see how that's productive, especially when you have like eight people running and the difference in votes between the winner and the loser is like 400 votes.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is, but to not even identify that as, wait a minute, who are these people? It's our election. I mean, if we're running for local school board in Evergreen Park, I really don't think that we want, you know, some jamoke from California ponying up money for one of the guys, do you?
So what's the solution?
What? I mean, in order to get a solution, I firmly believe this, you have to at least identify the problem. I mean, that's what I try and do on the show, is at least ask the questions that nobody else asks. I mean, if I knew all the solutions, I guess I could write a book and charge a lot for it or something.
No, I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
No, I'm saying you. But the point
I'm
is
just saying that, you know. But didn't we have some solutions as far as large?
I think Citizens United was the court case, Jimmy? Was it Citizens United?
Yeah,
right?
Citizens United.
Yeah.
Well,
and
guys.
I put a lid on corporate. I actually don't know what it did.
It said corporations were like regular people, and they could donate
and
something along those lines.
There was limits on donations from I think PACs or what was.
There's two different.
Broke that because
yeah, Citizens
United
broke that.
The unions could contribute as much, and now corporations can equal that. But here's an interesting fact that you guys brought up. Do you know when the East Indies Company was incorporated?
Oh, God, 15-something or
1600. So yeah. To think to the fact that we couldn't have known 176 years later that an organization could, in fact, be forever, it's kind of a misnomer because it was around.
Well,
it was also the most powerful company in the world.
They knew it. I mean, they knew some were around. The first American corporation. There was one before it, but I think the first one that really was huge was the Union Pacific, wasn't it? There was a couple before that, but I think that might have been one of the first real big ones. Railroad company.
Although
I don't think they were first, though.
DuPont company.
I don't think they were before. It's not.
I'm just reading this here, and it was the first modern business. 1850s was the Pennsylvania Railroad and the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad.
Yeah.
Bank of United States, Bank of New York, first American corporations. But the Boston Manufacturing Company was the first manufacturing company, 1813. But the railroads, you're right. It was the railroads.
And I look at the. But the point is, these guys have way too much power. The amount of, you know, for a long time, the biggest biggest lobbyists in terms of contribution was Fannie and Freddie. It was before that, it was the military, and now I think it's the drug companies, isn't it? I believe it is. I'm not positive. But you got people being paid off all the way, and they'll say it's contribution. And we've had so many people on the show, and I keep asking the question, when you're buying stuff, what exactly are you buying? I mean, and how much, what are the levels? Because I do believe it's the people who say politics should be run like a business really should maybe think again, because politics is run like a business. It's just not a business you understand. Right? I mean, they understand it. Politicians understand it, clearly.
So, Jimmy and Chief, Citizens United established that political spending in the form of protective speech, which allowed for corporations and labor unions. The decision struck down restrictions on independent political spending by corporations and labor unions.
See, when I was on the board of the CBO, which was in the 90s, I just tell you how much this all changed. And I don't know the exact rules, but I know what we as a CBOE could do. We had before she was hired, we had a young lady who was really good at somehow figuring out who was in town in terms of representatives and senators and so forth, and she would invite them to breakfast at the CBOE. Now, we're talking, you know, rolls and cookies and coffee. We're not talking about, I don't know, once in a while, if somebody was a big shot, we might have bacon and eggs. But so you'd have a little chow, and you sit down, and the person would talk a little bit, and people could ask questions. And we had some, you know, pretty serious guys. We had Tom Foley. We had Ron Sinkowski a couple times. And there were probably 10, 15 people, if I can remember who the hell they were. And I think the most that SIBO could give them was $500. Now, the individual people that were in the room, if they go, man, I really like this guy, they could write a check, but there was never anybody giving you nobody ever put the arm on you to do that. But I thought that was actually democracy sort of at its finest, where somebody would come over with, you know, maybe one guy with them. We're not talking about, you know, 15 security guards. They would plop down in the conference room up on the 7th floor, or they would sit down and we'd tell them about it. They'd say, okay, tell me about your business. And then he'd say, you know, what is important to you guys in Washington? What would damage your business? So it really was a quid pro quo back and forth. Then they would open it up to individual people who were there. And I was always there because I was on the board. And then, you know, there's some committee chairman and a couple other members, and then a few people from the staff and some people in the clearing firm. You know, we're talking 15 people, 20 people. And you could ask questions, and some guys would ask, like, some really dumb questions. But then they would answer them, and everybody would go. And the guy would get his $500 check. But I really thought it was a way, if a person, say Tom Foley came to town and went to five or six of these with, you know, breakfast and a lunch with, you know, 10 different firms here, that they walked away knowing a hell of a lot more about what these firms did and what was important to them. Then I thought it was an amazing education process on both ways. But $500 isn't exactly, you didn't buy the guy from that, I hope. But then all of a sudden, now what? You give him a check for $20,000 if you want, or what? I mean, I don't even know what the deal is. And, you know, I mean, what some of the bigger firms do, I know the Goldman Sachs of the world back in those days, is they could only give the maximum, but they would make all their partners, however as many they could, all the partners would also write checks. They were from the individuals, but obviously the person receiving them knew they were from Goldman Sachs. Now, the CBO never did that I know of. So it wasn't like you've got, if $500 was the number, you all of a sudden didn't get a huge stack of $500 checks from, you know, all the people who worked up on 7 and 30 members. You know, I don't think they if somebody did that, the message never got to me. You know, I could have been naive enough to know it wasn't going on, but I doubt it, because I would have been one of the people asked, and I never was. So, you know, and one of the things about, Kennedy wanted AIPAC to be registered as a foreign agent. And guess what happened to Kennedy? I'm not pointing any one quid pro quo there, but let's say that idea died with him. That's a fair statement, would you say, without pointing any fingers at anybody? You know, we're talking, and who's your favorite guy? Is it not Cruz? It's Cruz, isn't it, Jimmy? He said, "Oh no, they're all his people are all American." Okay, that's fine. But I mean, when you get a contribution, I'm not just picking on that. If you get a contribution from, say, NVIDIA, are they American? Or what is a multinational? Where's their allegiance to the moon or Mars or here or where?
Well, their allegiance is to the bottom line.
Exactly.
Well, maybe. I think a lot of it's political too. You don't think those guys?
Well, Chief, I mean, you now have the Democrats calling the new the new Democrats that came into office from Manjani as godless communists. I have a question. Who else is godless? Capitalists? Yeah.
Well, I think from...
I mean, if you look at the president, he's not exactly a God-fearing guy, is he?
No.
No, he's not...
By the way,
he's
we do
not,
have Mr. Flanagan
AKA,
on the line.
Taught Sunday school like Jimmy Carter did.
Well, speaking of teaching school, we have Mr. Flanagan, and I'm going to... John, how are you?
Morning, Tom. Morning, John.
Hey,
hey, John.
Morning, Jimmy. John, if you don't mind, I'm going to try and answer Jimmy's question here, and you can maybe give us the legal side of it. When people look at the Democrats and they call them all communists, okay? My question is...
Godless communists.
Okay, godless communists. God is on my side, you know, whatever. I remember the story where the guy walks into the boxing ring and he gives a sign of the cross. And the guy asks the priest, he said, "Does that mean God's going to favor him?" And he goes, "What do you think, God's a bookie?" we don't have anybody who kind of knows what these definitions mean. When I say nobody, there's some people that do. So it's easy for people who look at anybody who's against what's going on in the economy right now in some areas to say, well, they're all communists or they're all socialists. I would love to pull out a piece of paper to see if these people can even write and say, okay, define for me what is a communist and what is a socialist. But before you do that, define exactly what we have right now. And they'll look at you like you got four heads. What are you talking about? We're capitalistic. Are we really? Are we free market capitalists? Well, what's that exactly? You tell me. You're the one. Everybody who doesn't disagrees with something is branded as a socialist or a communist. But what exactly would you call what we have now? With massive groups of people, it's a plutocracy, really, but not how many people even know what that name means. And oh, by the way, the people who have all the money are buying up all the news outlets, which is even... I don't even know if they did. Yeah, I don't even know if they did that in Russia or Germany, for God's sake. But maybe they did. You know.
They did. No, that's in the authoritarian playbook.
Yeah. So I mean, where are we going here? I mean, if you were to say, give me an example of free market capitalism, I bet between the four of us, because we're not the dumbest, we're not the smartest, sharpest knives in the drawer, but we're not the dullest. I bet we could maybe go through maybe six or seven industries that I would consider to be close to perfectly competitive. And after that, okay, what do you call Commonwealth Edison? What do you call Northwestern? What do you call NVIDIA? I mean, we're talking free market capitalism here. What are we talking about? So anybody who doesn't like that or sees a problem is automatically a socialist or communist. I read an article, John Flanagan, you'll hate this. So it was some dude, I don't know if he was from here or where he was from, what state he was from, what country he was from. He writes this article about economics, and he said, if you don't have antitrust, if you don't have any of that stuff, and you just let people basically do what they're going to do on a, quote, capitalist end of it, without any sort of rules on how you can do that, you end up with 90% of the people stealing, 10% of the people stealing at least 90% of the money. And he goes, it actually can be somewhat vibrant while it's happening. But once it's over, you can't get, as the Irish say, you can't get, you know, blood out of a turnip. The 90% don't have any more money to steal from. So he says the job of government is to somehow give the 90%, give a lot of that money back to people so the next group of 10%ers can steal it all over again. I'm reading this thing, I go, this guy's a lunatic. I read it a second time, and I go, he's not that far off. If you don't have antitrust, if you don't have any of that stuff, and somebody gets all the dough, and somebody looks at it and goes, well, this isn't working right. Now, what is that person? Is he a communist? Is he a socialist? What is he? He's just saying it's not working right. I mean, the people go ahead, John.
To go to the definition, you know, the godless communist, Jimmy, that you brought up, it's a misnomer. I don't think there are any godless communists. The communists have the state as their god. They just, you know, it's got the same, you know, religious fervor, and you don't cross it and die for it. And it's a misnomer to say that communists are godless.
So when's the last time we had a truly communist government in the world?
When you say, I'm going to ask Mr. Flanagan first, what is your split between socialism and communism? And socialism, it's communism to me is more like socialism with a dictator. Where am I wrong with that?
Well, it's a merging of fascism and socialism.
I think it is too, which is kind of an odd combination, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, socialism and communism, I mean, they really, there had been, you know, communistic like people, you know, in the 18th century. If you look at people like Voltaire and Rousseau, I mean, the stuff that they said, you know, you think Bernie Sanders is trailing way far behind at this point. They're way off the map intellectually, as far as what, you know, what the times were really all about. But socialism was a respectable thing, and it all of this, and what you were talking about with the, you know, monopolies and the trust too, it was a response to what had gotten already completely out of hand in the end of the 19th century. That's right, we have the Sherman Antitrust Act. The inequities were just staggering, and everybody could see it. And it was, you know, whenever you had financial panics, like in 1893, 1873.
Yeah, what percentage of the population right now even knows what the Sherman Antitrust Act is?
Oh, this is the thing, you know. It's not enforced, for one thing. That's why nobody knows about it, really. And that's by design too. So it answered a problem, you know, in the late 19th, early 20th centuries that then, you know, morphed into something completely unmanageable that nobody wanted to touch, and it's still on the books, but it's not a weapon anymore. Nobody fears it. You know, we've been acculturated not even to know it exists. So,
well, I'm sorry, what exists?
The Sherman Antitrust Act. You know.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. It certainly is not being applied now.
And I don't think people even know. I mean, I always looked at socialism as if a group of people want to do that, you know, the Swedens of the world and so forth, and they're okay with it, let them do it. I mean, it's not my brand of ball, but I can't imagine.
Well, as usual, I just looked it up on the internet, and socialism, the major industries and resources are owned collectively or by the state, but they're still private property, personal items, and smaller free market businesses. It's done through existing democratic and political structures to narrow the gap. Communism, they eliminate private property. All the resources and means of production are community owned and owned by the community. And also they do not work through existing democratic or political structures. That has to be overthrown.
Well, what there I was in I went over to Denmark for a wedding of all things, and the people over there. I mean, that's Denmark is, I guess you'd call it socialistic. Then and I think the tax rate was something outrageous for your business. You know, 70-80% or something that I wouldn't roll for, but all your medical stuff was provided for. All your college education was provided for. Everybody worked. It wasn't like, everybody hung around. I mean, the unemployment rate is way less than ours, I think. It works for them. It doesn't work for me.
Well, I mean, it's not socialist because, you know, the state doesn't own the corporations now.
No.
So, that I mean, from that regard, it's got a... It's just got a...
It's kind of a blend. It's sort of a...
I mean, And let me just put one more perspective. In the UK, when we lived there, yes, the tax rate technically is higher. Well, you put healthcare in there, and you pay in, it's the same, if not better.
Well, I have
national healthcare.
I have a question regarding the tax rate, Mr. Flanagan. You're a world traveler as well, and so is Mr. Lawler, except everybody's a world traveler but me. When you say the tax rate, it's and you say in Britain, say, I'll just pick a number on my head, it's 60%. Oh man, it's ridiculous. Here it's 35%. But I don't think any of those countries, France and some of them, I don't think they have the three-tier tax thing that we do here, where they have the income tax. Actually, it's four legs of a stool. There's the income tax. There's the payroll tax, which actually is almost as much the government gets out of that as they do the income tax, which means Social Security and unemployment, or Medicare. I'm sorry, the unemployment is state, but the Medicare and Social Security, and then you have your state taxes, and then you have your local taxes. So we really have four legs to the stool, and I'm not so sure if you add ours up that we don't actually pay more than France. Or where am I wrong here? You guys have been more.
Well, there's a lot to that. First of all, you do have. You know, I have always said this: the U.S. is a much higher tax rate society or country. God, that's good English. We are higher taxed than we think we are. Look at the city of Chicago. But every it doesn't matter. You can go anywhere. There's property tax. You're right. But all countries have that, too.
I don't know that France has states.
Well, no, you have city taxes in France. You have a much higher VAT. Okay, a value-added tax is very high, 20%.
I'm not saying anything good about France. What I'm saying is I've heard people on CNBC who I won't say they're idiots, because they'll say something like, we need to broaden the tax base. There's too many people in this country that don't pay any income tax, meaning, lower class people, meaning immigrants, a lot of what. I'm going, what are you talking about? Every time you give somebody a $1,000 check, you're supposed to be taking 15% out of it for Social Security and Medicare, right? So there's 15% right off the top. If you give somebody a 1099, every time you buy something, you're paying a sales tax. By the way, you got to live someplace. So either you or the person you're renting from is paying. How does anybody not pay any tax? And yet people will say that. John, you've heard it.
It's a silly. Yeah. Well, buying one thing. I go out and buy a carton of milk. You're paying tax on that.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
We had a guy, Mr. Flanagan, when I was living at 70 West here, and every Saturday morning, I take my mom to breakfast, right? So I go downstairs, 7 o'clock, I got my schedule, get my coffee. It was one of those places in the building. And I get my coffee and talk to the guy, and there's this, whatever you want to call him, I don't know if he had a home or not, but street guy out kind of begging all night long. And he'd come in, and he was always clean and well-dressed. He must have had a place he was living. So he'd come in with his 20 bucks he'd make overnight, 25 bucks, and the dude would buy a big thing of Coke, two or three bags of Doritos when they were 30 cents a piece, and he'd buy like 17 lottery tickets. And I'm thinking, this dude's tax rate is higher than anybody in the country. by buying all, they're a tax too, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's a dream tax,
Yeah.
Your dreams are being taxed. So.
You know what the mathematical definition of why people buy lottery tickets, Mr. Flanagan? You know this.
I don't know it, I forgot it.
People's risk reward curve, if it's a life changing event, is skewed to the right. Which means if you look at a log normal curve, people are willing to take a much less chance of win if the win is big enough to change their life. So you would never bet on the Bears if you'd never put $100 down on the Bears if it was not, essentially 1-to-1. And it's like people who do the entire left side of the parlay card. You have actually zero chance of winning. But if you do, it's a life-changing event. So people are willing to essentially, you know, jettison the mathematics, jettison the fair return, if they think if they actually do win, all of a sudden they can quit their job, buy a new car, and everything else. And it, but the mathematical term is that you're at a certain level, your risk reward curve starts shifting to the right. How's that for something I remember?
Yeah, that's a pretty seductive prospect, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean,
brain just goes out the window. So.
Yeah. Well, oh, speaking of which, I bought a lottery ticket yesterday. I forgot to check it.
Yeah. Now you know you're living the good life.
Oh God! You know, so of course, me being the Stocks and Jacks guy, you see all those scratch off tickets. I'm going to say a year or two ago. I can't put a different date on. They start at the bottom, $5, $10, $15. The max used to be $35. Well, now they got $50 tickets. They got $50 scratch offs. That's a quick 50. 50's kind of a lot of dough, isn't it?
Yeah, for me it's a lot of dough.
So, anyway, what do you guys make of? We are somewhat of Stocks and Jacks, but what do you guys make of that thing? Talking about changing the page two, Paul Harvey. What do you guys make of what's going on in the WNBA with this Caitlin Clark?
Oh God!
Oh, what happened? I saw
somebody punched her in the throat when she was on the ground.
Oh.
Is that right, Jimmy? I mean, I think that's what happened. And it wasn't even a foul call. Kind of a skirmish, and some big girl punched her in the throat.
Is this during the game?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, on the sidewalk, it's assault. I mean, it's not even...
She's being advised to go to Europe just to save her life.
Yeah. And the league just can't deal with it. I don't know if it's... If they think it's racial, they won't deal with it. And the rest of the people in the league evidently seem to be too dumb to realize this lady's their meal ticket. It's like going out and trying to throw a Babe Ruth's head or something, for God's sake.
Right, but you know, it's got all sorts of other contaminating, you know, things in it that are, you know, third rail issues like race and gender and sexuality that people just dance around. You know, they don't want to talk about.
Well, how long can you dodge around what the questions are? I mean, we seem to be getting good at that, aren't we?
You know, I was just going to add, and they suspended the player for one game
after so many people
after the outcry.
Yeah, after so many people sent the video in on their like cell phones and stuff. I mean, it wasn't even a foul call in the game. I mean, it's not the first time. Every night she gets a cheap shot, it seems.
How can you not think that's all planned and fixed, that the refs are being paid not to look?
I don't...
And only when it's egregious, and they can't get away with it, they'll back off. But to me, it's all engineered. They want it this way. They have to want it this way.
I don't think they want it this way, John. They don't want to bring up why it may be happening.
Are you saying that we're now having the Caitlin Clark rules, like the Michael Jordan rules? Where, you know, Detroit would mug him. I mean, it wasn't even close. They would throw him to the ground. And then you go back to assault. What happened to Rudy Tomjanovich?
Yeah.
And that guy smashed his skull. He got suspended, but he didn't go to jail.
He didn't go to jail and also ruined his career.
Yeah.
I mean, he never played again, I don't think.
No, he didn't, but he became a very good coach. But I see what the thing is with Caitlin Clark. She's a threat, and there are a lot of girls that feel that, or I won't say that, let's say other players in the league, that she's taking away. And does she have to be like Michael Jordan, bulk up, and just have to deal with it? Because I remember, you know, during the early years of the Bulls against the Pistons, the Pistons would mug him.
They would mug everybody, though. They weren't.
Yeah, but they really went after Jordan. There was one time where, I mean, honestly, Bill Laimbeer body slammed him. He could have been on, you know, worldwide wrestling with that body slam of Michael. Michael went up, he just grabbed him and tossed him to the floor.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't even close. They were cheap about it, but this thing with Caitlin Clark has some overtones that I don't think the Jordan thing had. Just saying. And then those overtones are all through college ball.
You didn't have the race overtones. You didn't have the gender overtones or the gender God, isn't that a, I sound so articulate now. You know, the gender, decisions.
Yeah.
The gender overtones, the sexuality, you know, of, am I, you know, are you a lesbian or not, and so forth. So, yeah, it's, all I can say is the WNBA just looks more, I mean, they've always looked incompetent. John, I want your opinion on this, but they've always looked incompetent. They look especially incompetent now.
They're not as crooked as FIFA, but...
Well, no one has... I have a friend who used to work for them in Singapore. He handled selling the marketing rights. The stories he would tell, and this is way before they were indicted by the DOJ, that's the one time I think we should be pretty proud of the DOJ, when they went after FIFA.
Well, they're going to go after somebody out of here, out of the country, but...
So he was responsible for selling the TV rights, the media rights in Asia, and it was disgusting. It was so dirty.
I'm going to ask our attorney here, Mr. Flanagan. How, as you know, not that it really matters to anybody or me, the idea of selling the same event. I mean, the Cubs were on Apple Friday night, and nobody could watch them, right? Okay, well, I don't have Major League Baseball, that one, but if I did and bought every game, I mean, I'm buying the marquee. I mean, how many times do I got to buy the damn thing? You know, then I got to buy Prime, I got to buy Apple, but how is it that if I can't imagine us ever having the money to do it or being dumb enough to do it. Suppose PTI wanted to sponsor the new Bears Stadium, wherever the hell it is, and we pony up $20 million a year, pick a number. And all of a sudden, FIFA comes in and says, oh, by the way, we're going to have a game there, but you can't mention...
Yeah, I saw that.
You can't mention PTI. Well, is somewhere in our contract, was somebody far-seeing enough to say, well, if FIFA ever comes here, we can't use your name, and I said okay and signed it? Or do they just say, screw you, PTI, it's not your stadium for this 2 weeks? I mean, I hearken back, and I don't know the full details of this, but maybe you do, Mr. Lee. When was the Olympics in London? Was it like two or three times ago or something? We were doing the show.
Yeah, it was in the 90s, I think.
No, it wasn't, because we were doing the show, I think.
It was in the 2000s. Yeah, 2006.
Okay.
But the idea was that, let's say, PTI became a sponsor, or Coke of the official sponsor. If somebody else had a Merrill Lynch sign on their building for 40 years, they had to cover it up.
An article in today's Wall Street Journal, I think, because I was reading those. But so they're covering it up. Did you guys see the article at all?
No, that's what I'm asking.
What's going on is that they're covering up when they're making the covering so thin that you can see the sign anyways, and it's they're really playing it. And what they're doing is,
but you can't when you say the stadium, you got to say it's the Dallas Stadium. You can't say it's AT&T Stadium.
No, you can't. But so they're covering the signs, and let me pull up the article here. If I can find it. Now I can't even find the Wall Street.
But
draft.
Mr. Flynn, how is that written? Do they call you and ask you about it?
They probably have to buy a waiver from you, or I would think at least. I mean, they acknowledge your right, and then they'd say, by the way, we have to ask you to cave on this because there was X number of dollars involved in a long-term relationship. You don't want to stand in the way of that, do you? You know? So it would have to be negotiated on an ad hoc basis. But I can't imagine that that's very efficient or very fair. I don't know.
Well, so you have to buy this thing for all this money. By the way, if we have anything big here, we're not saying your name.
Yeah, please understand why.
Yeah, please understand. please understand this. Did you, I don't want to, since we're all males here, did you see the Sox game the other day? What happened at third baseman?
No.
Oh, God.
What happened?
The guy's playing third base, minding his own business. The pitcher, the guy bunts the ball, and it was enough right toward the pitcher that the third baseman doesn't run in. He goes to cover the bag. And the pitcher gets it maybe halfway between plate and third base, so he's 40, 45 feet away maximum. He throws the ball like as hard as he can at this guy. The guy gets totally handcuffed. It hits him right where you don't want to get hit other than your face.
Yeah.
Like, whack. The guy goes down like he shot him, as any of us would do. I've never seen anything like that in baseball. I've seen a catcher on a foul tip get whacked where you don't want to get whacked. But this guy, the guy threw the ball so damn hard, it was like from me to the end of the office or something. And the guy's got his mitt up by his face, and all of a sudden he had no chance at this ball. It hit him dead on. Goes down. I'm going, whoa. He finally, after like
so,
10...
Yeah. The article, the FIFA article is in the Wall Street Journal. I suggest our listeners look at that. And FIFA told the stadium sponsors to get lost. They spun it into marketing gold, and is what they've done. But like Coke, you know, they're sponsors in some stadiums.
Well, AT&T is Dallas.
They're giving out free Coke outside the stadium.
Well, what's the SoFi is the one they're playing all these games in L.A. right, Jimmy?
Yeah.
So SoFi, you can't mention SoFi. It's what is it? It's L.A. Stadium, right?
No,
Santa Clara.
They say it's in
Santa Clara as well.
I don't think you could say SoFi.
No, you can't.
The Santa Clara is the Santa Clara Stadium. You can't say AT&T.
You can't say Levi's for the Santa Clara, California. It's a Levi's Stadium.
Is it Levi? Okay.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Hey, I don't know the details of all these. Real quick on what's going on in the Middle East. I was sent an article yesterday, and it would seem like it was, you know, how's an article ever in the middle? They were talking about how they didn't come out and say it was incompetency, but they said it was really strange that these different deals that people are signing, and one of the reasons why the fighting had started, now it's evidently off again, which we're seeing a market way up, which, you know, we don't want any more fighting, I don't think anybody does. But they were talking about how the J.D. Vance negotiated a deal with, evidently, the Iranians regarding Lebanon. And I mean, I'm paraphrasing this thing, that left Israel pretty much out of the loop.
Yeah, that's pretty well known.
But then Rubio went over and negotiated a deal with Israel regarding Lebanon that left Iran totally out of the loop. And the conflicting of the deals and how a lot of what's going on is a different interpretation of the 14-point... The article was pretty straight, and it wasn't exactly pointing fingers at either side. I don't know if you can even do that. But they were talking about how it's a total misinterpretation of the points that are... I mean, the intention was evidently to make the proposal as simple as possible, and now both sides, or certainly the Iranians, are interpreting it a little different than essentially we are. And that there's actually two deals now regarding the ceasefire in Lebanon. One, which is a J.D. Vance deal that kind of leaves the Israeli guys out of it, because maybe he thought they don't even want a problem over there. You know, who knows what he thought. And then Rubio one essentially was between his Israelis and Lebanon, and left. This is what the article said. It said it wasn't a question of right and wrong. They're just all different. Is that, Mr. Flanagan, is that even possible? Is that they just don't match up? Is that even possible?
Well, I think it might have been planned.
By who?
Kind of by us.
Why do we want stuff to not match if we want it over?
I'm not saying it would have been wise to do it, but it might have been a way of giving the illusion so-and-so is in so-and-so's camp, and, you know, here's what they want, and they can play these, you know, up against each other and work some deal between them some way. But I think it's about giving, you know, some kind of leg up, boost to one side over the other, to let them know just how fragile their case may be. So there's not even agreement on this side of the
argument.
I'm not trying to make excuses.
Yeah,
for
I'm not either. I would say, though, am I wrong here? No matter what you might think of, you know, the president and his people, I think it's fairly clear to most, or I hope it is, that the pushback he's been getting with some of his own party, everybody wants this over pretty far before the election, in time for gas prices to right themselves. It's not going to help the general inflation number, but it, for gas prices to right themselves and to declare some sort of a victory, how we got something for doing what we did. And I have to believe that from the White House on down through the Senate and the House, that even though everybody's arguing about it, that has to be their goal, isn't it? I mean, what else could it be?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely it is. And they've admitted it.
Well, I mean, but there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think.
Well, I didn't say there was.
Yeah, I'm just saying it. I think the market's interpretation, boy, you got to be careful when you do that. The market's interpretation is, despite the boulders along the way, that in a couple of months, that goal will be achieved. And I hope the market's right, to be honest with you. I mean, Mr. Flanagan, what do you think? I mean, you think there's a chance of that happening? I think there is.
Yeah, and I think there's a whole faction in this country that don't care if the deal's wrapped up before then. They prefer that it not be, just to improve the Democrats' chance in the midterms. You know, the more this can be a millstone around Trump's neck, the better. So,
well, I mean, no matter what, it wasn't a great idea. He's got a problem with that going forward, but the question is how bad? How quickly are people going to forget? You know, probably pretty quickly. We forget everything pretty quickly, right?
Oh, yeah. But I'd like it to be over, too. I would have liked it to have been over a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if we...
liked it.
Maybe we should never start it.
There is a... the real problem is this is really... You know, let me just be a very rhetorical question. What the F is Iran doing in Lebanon anyways? Right? So, I am very, very neutral now on Israel. But what are they doing in Lebanon? And this whole deal, you know, one of the reasons this is such an existential threat to Israel is the nuclear weapon. But also, you know, when you have an extremely well-financed, well-trained group to the north of you that happens to lob missiles in every once in a while, like every other week, then, you know, that is. So I think this peace deal will unravel. I don't think there will be one. There'll be one. We'll announce
you're wrong.
It a month
hope
later.
Hope you're wrong on that.
Fighting again.
Yeah.
You know, and because it does not address the underlying issues of, the Israeli behavior or the Iranian encroachment here in trying to destabilize the borders around the state of Israel. And also, I didn't make this up, but many of our Iranian foreign policy analysts said that this is really a battle for supremacy in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia is out of the battle. It's really between Israel and Iran. So I don't see the peace holding. I think that it was a mistake to do this. And we did it because we thought it would be easy. We believed, you know, some bad advice in there. But no, there's no way. I think it's going to be a month on, a month off from now till time immemorial, until there's something major happens.
I was under the impression, and again, I just read the news, and I learned from you guys, I learned from Lou. It seems to me that Iran, when they do all this stuff, I mean, somebody, they're always backing somebody that, you know, is a no good nick someplace. But to a certain extent, we're everywhere too. I mean, I don't know what we're still doing in Syria or Iraq or something, but we're still there. I mean, our God knows what we're doing. I mean, I assume since it's us, we're doing all the right thing, but I'm not so sure I assume that. But I mean, it seemed to me that in the last 7 to 8 years, you know, some Trump, some Biden. I mean, our military somehow beat up on the Houthis enough to where that wasn't as big a problem as it was 2 years ago. It seemed like the obviously the stuff in Gaza, those guys are in worse shape, the Hamas, than they've been in God knows how long. And I thought the Hezbollah was kind of getting their ass kicked in Lebanon, and there's a new leader in Syria, right? So I really thought that like you, Mr. Lee, I thought it didn't make them good guys in Iran at all. But I thought they were pretty much reeling to start with. So I kind of questioned the timing. It didn't make them good people. I mean, everybody agrees, even the people who think I disagree with them on the show, everybody agrees that the idea of having religious group running your place, making all the rules, is about as anti, well, I won't say anti-American, but is definitely different than our philosophy of government, shall we say, diametrically opposed, about as far opposed as you can get.
Well, religious so, guys that are authoritarian.
Yeah. So, I mean, okay. It's not like, but it seemed to me that we were kind of beating them back almost like a Russia situation. You know, we contained them, we were containing them pretty good, and I thought that we blasted the bunker where we said, okay, they're not going to have any nuclear stuff for another 10 years, or whatever we said. Now, all of a sudden, we attack. I just was kind of surprised at the timing. But they obviously know stuff that I don't. Mr. Flanagan, what do you think? I mean, was I getting the total wrong impression by believing these guys, or what?
Tom, believing them about what?
I mean, that we are sort of actually already had them back on their heels. I don't know why. It seemed like if we were going to do something, maybe should have done it a few years ago, and they had all these guys actually doing good. But now, Mr. Flanagan, talk to me on this one. What do you mean? Was I wrong by belief? I thought they were about as weak a spot as they've been in a while, or was I wrong?
Iran? Oh, yeah. No, I don't think they were. I mean, and I think there was a lot of inertia to keep them in a position where they could always make trouble on a moment's notice and stir things up and finance something somewhere else, and you know, take attention away from whatever else people wanted, you know, to look at that moment. So it's always been useful to some people, some, you know, other countries. I would say, including the UK and other people in Europe, to keep this as a flashpoint, because it distracts, you know, other powers, and you know, takes the heat off of you know, whatever at the moment. So if you want somebody, you know, to always be available to make trouble, Iran was made to order in a lot of ways. And I think they were being played, but they knew that probably and didn't care, and they were, you know, perfectly happy to do.
I, John, I respectfully disagree that the European countries wanted Iran to continue to be a flashpoint. Iran was backed by Russia and China from a long-term basis. So I think that you know, I don't think that really is accurate. That the UK was interested in having Iran being a.
Well, why do you guys?
I think financially, absolutely. I think so.
You know,
when it came to oil, and when it came to, you know, just international commerce, it was. I'm not saying it was.
They were very interested in having a free flow of oil, so there was no oil embargoes because they import their energy. But to say that they were, you know, invested in keeping them as a flashpoint, no.
Why do you guys,
the Europeans want, it's just no problems.
Since you brought up the stuff of the oil, and I want to dash to the new Treasury guy here in a minute, but Fed guy, sorry, but what is with the on again, off again oil thing? And I'm not, you know, I don't want to go down this road. Is Trump really a buddy of Putin's or something? Because I don't really want to get into that, but. There was a guy. The guy from who's the guy who runs India? He's kind of an odd duck.
Modi.
Yeah, he listened to him on YouTube, and somebody's interviewing him, and he goes, "You know, we always, because we never really imported some oil from Russia. We got it from the Middle East, like everybody else. All of a sudden, all this stuff's happening with Russia, and they can't do this, they can't do that. So the oil's there is cheaper." And then we start importing it from them, and then the U.S. says, we're going to sanction you with tariffs if you buy any oil from Russia. So, okay, we stop or we don't stop, but we get this directive. And he goes, all of a sudden, 6 months later, we're directed again by the U.S. In order to keep the oil market stable, we want you to buy Russian oil. He basically, he goes, over an 18-month or two-year period, he outlined two or three different directions. I don't know if one was from Biden or whatever, but he goes, what do you guys want? I mean, what are you talking about? Well, first, we're not supposed to buy it. Then we're supposed to buy it. I mean, are you guys have any idea what you're doing?
I think this is kind of what I was just saying about having it as a flashpoint. If you can constantly keep things in upheaval and tweak it, you know, here and there or wherever as the moment dictates, and, you know, Iran is perfectly happy to be a flashpoint because the crazy is running the country anyway, but other people are definitely benefiting from this kind of uncertainty. It's not us.
Well, the people here, our oil companies surely have.
Well, I mean, now, but it's, you know, we we, like everybody else, would benefit from a much more stable Middle East.
Who's we?
But I think the design has been to keep it unstable.
Yeah, the mistake I think we're all making, as we are not 25 anymore, the mistake we're making is we think we're included in the we. Do you think the guy who's getting Trump's buddy, who's getting the Venezuelan oil down in the Gulf now, do you think he's worried about the four of us? He's had the best 2 years of his life, or the year and a half. I mean, it seems like we're not talking about the World War II we. We're talking about a kind of a splintered we here. I mean, do you think the guy at NVIDIA, if he has a great year by sipping stuff to the Chinese, that he's worried about us? I mean, somehow or another, we've let this really fracture, and I don't know how you get that back together. Do you guys, or maybe we never do. It seems kind of, when I look at our new Fed chair, and actually, if you listen to the guy, I don't really have a problem with the dude. I don't know if I believe him, but I'm looking at the money supply here, and we're not supposed to talk about this, right, the money supply. Somebody has decreed that it's no longer an economic thing you got to watch. Now, who that somebody is, I have no idea. It's sort of somebody says, for a bunch of fatsos, we're going to decree you should never get on a scale. Okay, well, that's interesting, but we just look in the mirror and see, well, all of a sudden you can't fit in the mirror, you think you're too big or what? Money supply last month went up at a 13% annual rate. That's higher than Civil War. It's about as high as World War II. If you're nicer and you take the 2 month, it's 9.7. If you take the 3 month, it's 7.5.
Jesus.
And yet this guy comes out and talks about how he's really going to fight inflation and he's going to put together four or five committees. What are we talking about here? I mean, who benefits by the? We certainly realize that the people in the bottom parts of the K do not go anywhere with inflation. And this I saw after I dug out the numbers last week. And these are simple numbers. Anybody can get them. Since January 2020, now this is Trump and Biden, to 2026, allegedly because of the COVID, the money supply is up 48% in 6 years, which I don't think it ever did in World War II. I don't think it ever did in the Civil War, except for the Confederates, and that's probably one of the reasons why they lost, is they couldn't control their currency. Well, the CPI says that the inflation has been up 28% during the same period of time. So they're essentially a little more, I'm going to say the 48%, and if you listen to Hal tomorrow, he'll say that that's really the inflation number. I think it's a little less than that because we did probably have a little productivity in there and a little bit of population increase. So I'm going to say the real inflation rate since 2020 has been 42-40. The admitted number is 28. All right, so we're not close. And the amount of the hourly wages, I think, is up 21 or 22. So I'm going to say to you guys, because we're two different sides of the aisle, that a real lot of what everybody's fighting about is fighting about that, is that people are not keeping up. Yet if you can borrow money cheap enough, than cheaper than anybody else, or if you own stocks, up till now anyway, you have done better than this, which means that the wealth of stuff you're not working at is, and I'm going to say that all the Democrats that are winning, saying this disparity in income and stuff that are being labeled communists, I don't know if they have a solution at all. I think they probably don't, but they look at it and they say something's wrong here. I mean, and there is something wrong here. I'd rather not be along party lines, but Mr. Flanagan, what's the fix? And it's not like the Fed realized it. It's only getting worse.
Well, and of course, the fix that Mamdani's endorsees and all these people, who have identified a grassroots issue, people's disaffection, and people realize just as you say that they're being left behind, but their solution is just to tax everybody even more and run an even less respectable financial house to just throw money around. And then once you get into power, and you have enough people, it doesn't really matter who's out of the loop or in the loop. Everybody's going to be out of the loop by that.
Well, I mean, I don't, as you well know, I think, you know, and this is not about me, I don't have a problem with people making money. My job is to make as much money as I can for my clients, and I try to do that every day. I also will say, though, that if we decide we need more money, taxes or whatever, it's almost like, it wasn't Dillinger that said it, but who was the guy that said, why do you rob the banks? Well, that's where the money is.
That's where the money is, yeah.
I mean, if you have the point where 3% of the people are going to have 80% of the wealth, I think that's probably where you got to tax. Where else are you going to tax? I don't want to see that happen, but as a practical matter, you better tax somebody with the dough or you're not going to get anything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you get if a guy's making 40 grand a year and you raise the tax rate from 15% to 25? What does that get you? 4 grand? I'm talking about, you know, after all the deductions and everything. Before the deductions, if he's making 40 grand, what does it get you? $300? There's no money there. Now, Elon Musk.
All right, gentlemen, I'm gonna have to step off here.
Okay, bud.
I'm gonna say
good
goodbye
week,
to you.
Yep.
John, good talking to you.
Yep, so, same here, John.
We'll see everybody Friday.
Friday we're off.
Well, then I'll see you Thursday.
All right. So Mr. Flanagan, what? There's got to be a few. I would make a few tweaks in the tax laws right now that I don't think I'm going after anybody. Although anybody, what did Homer Simpson's father say? I get a check every month. I don't know why it's, I'm getting it. I don't deserve it. But if they change it, it'll be hell to pay.
I didn't ask for it, but if I don't get it, there's going to be hell to pay.
Yeah, I mean I think strongly. I believe that you need to raise the corporate tax rate, since they're, according to the Supreme Court, they're regular people. You need to raise the corporate tax rate to what everybody else pays, but if you declare a dividend, the dividend is deductible, so you don't pay twice, which I think is an abomination. And that's the reason why all these companies have way so much cash, why they become political figures, why they become all this stuff, because they use an excuse that I never pay a dividend to anybody else because they double taxation. I think you need to change that. I don't think if somebody bought IBM at $10 100 years ago and they croak, that their kids should be able to use a basis of IBM at 275. Now, having said that, I would apply a CPI. You didn't make 275. Some of that has been inflation. So if the inflation since whenever your dad bought it or mother bought it has been 50%, I think you should only have to pay capital gains on half of the gain. I mean, I would do something like that. So, but the idea that whoever the lady was that bought Mark Cuban's firm, she had all the stock in one of the gambling places, I think the dad died, and all of a sudden she had to pay no tax on it. Nobody ever did. Now, I don't think it should be, you know, ordinary income numbers, because, you know, it was an investment for years and years. But somewhere in there, you need to do something. And I like the idea of the people at Apple. I like the idea of Warren Buffett finally having to send somebody a check, because he doesn't need all that dough. And by the way, the shareholders maybe do. So I think you could make some very intelligent decisions in the tax law that would increase. And I honestly wouldn't care if all of a sudden the corporations declared a zillion dividends and sent everybody checks. And then those people, they're going to use that money to buy stuff and invest in houses and things, right? I think that from a political, from every sort of type of thing, those couple of changes would help quite a bit. And yet, I would have no chance of that. Why not? I mean, there's problems. I'm not saying because Musk has all the money, let's go grab it from him. I never say that. Because one of these days...
No, you know, your idea makes sense and it's rational, and I think it would have the benefits you're talking about. The problem with the way
is being framed is it's personalized. It's not about you know increasing the corporate tax rate. It's about taxing the blankety blank out of the figureheads who are the problem here. Not their companies. It's those people. And the rhetoric that Bernie Sanders has, you know, gotten away with and thrown around for decades now, has now become, you know, it's a mantra across the board with the people on you know, this insurgency, that it's just like in Tsarist Russia. I mean, it's not, you know, the whole engine of the Russian economy or the crookedness or the corruption. It's this family. It's this bunch that's doing it. So you localize and focus on everybody's, you know, energies, that one thing. And once you take that out, it's all going to be right and just and moral again, which is absolutely ridiculous. And it would be far less, you know, burdensome or difficult to increase the corporate tax rate than to legalize murder against, you know, CEOs, which is what we're doing now. But that's the rhetoric is not, you know, favoring your suggestion, Tom.
Well, I think that both
there's a reason why it's not.
Well, in terms of both sides, and I totally abhor this on both sides. I mean, on the Republican side, I won't say the Republican side, on the Trump side, he's pointing out to his people the people that are screwing you. It's the immigrants. It's this, that, and the other thing. None of that makes any sense in terms of dollars and cents. To be honest,
it makes a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't. In terms of dollars and cents, it makes.
In terms of the welfare, you know, that's being thrown around, and the fraud that goes along with
But welfare is a pimple on the ass of the elephant. But I'm not saying I agree with it. I never said I did. But you exaggerate. You point at somebody you don't like, and you exaggerate how much that stuff's costing you. Okay, now on the other end, you've got the Democrats essentially starting to do the same thing. But there is some truth, just like there is. With, you know, with the money you spend on various groups and everything, there is some truth to corporate welfare. Okay, I don't really care. I mean, as a matter of fact, I would almost love it if some firm got together and actually made some products that we needed and more products and invested and made a lot of money. That's America, but nobody thinks. I mean, Elon Musk has hired a lot of people for Starlink and all that stuff, and there's a lot of brilliant stuff going on in there. Everybody thinks that he made his money in Tesla by somehow weaseling a deal with the government where if you and I bought a Ford pickup, he got a check. That guy stole more from other people in this country than every migrant together. So I can understand why you don't say, well, Tesla should just pay a little more corporate income tax. You look at the person. How did they get there? How did Microsoft, you know, and I have a lot of Microsoft I manage for people, how did Microsoft get where they are? Well, every single company that was a competitor, they went out and bought. They were, in terms of the Antitrust Act, they could be the worst offenders of all. You know, what happened to WordPerfect? What happened to MapQuest? They're all dead, right? Because they tied them into their system and you couldn't use them. And you could only use their own stuff, right? I mean, that's exactly the reason why those. So when people point to the individuals, it's not like Microsoft is a company run by like a bunch of schmucks like us. You don't even know their names. The people who run the place are proud of it. They're the political arm of the place. They become the you know, they want to be president of the world. So to say that it's wrong for somebody to point out Musk, we didn't point him out. He pointed himself out, didn't he?
But he's become the, you know, target of choice. You know, the billionaires tax movement. You know, Gavin Newsom is spouting it. And again, this is just so darn short-sighted.
I'm with you, but how did the billionaires become billionaires? I mean, if a billionaire is running a drug company that somehow used the research of University of Chicago and all the people who worked there, somehow piled in, got a patent that they were only 20% a part of, and for the next 17 years charged $30 for a pill that cost them $2 to make. I got a problem with that, and it's personal.
Well, I've got enough of a problem with it that if they put somebody like Albert Bourla of Pfizer in jail for a year, that would do more good
for
everybody than taxing Elon Musk.
Well, I'm saying the Where did Elon?
I guess I'm saying the hell with taxes. How about some imprisonment?
Well, you're not going to get me to disagree with that. But at the very least, you know, we sit there and go, all right, how is it? I mean, unfortunately, you and I, for a while, well, for me, my entire life, people in my family have dropped from cancer. When I look at the chemotherapy numbers and I see 45 to 50 grand here and 5 grand other places, and everybody here is outraged because they're not paying the same amount, the question really should be, why are we paying so much? And I got to believe that chemotherapy costs them what? $500? $1,000? I mean, maybe it's a little more than that, but I mean, what are we doing, Jen? I mean, and we're letting it happen. So when people look at that and they say, what am I doing? I was in the hospital emergency room and I got 2 stitches and it was 10 grand and it should be $200. What do you do? Plus, then the hospital's a nonprofit. They don't even pay any taxes. I mean, this is so screwed up.
You think giving Medicare for all is going to bring down the prices?
Every time the left puts together, the reason why they think it's a solution is because Medicare doesn't pay as much as other people do. And if Medicare can get that price, why can't everybody get it? It's not a question of who's paying it. It's a question of why does Medicare pay so much less? If that's the real price and the hospitals are making money at that, why is everybody else paying 5 times more? I mean, there's different interpretations to that Medicare for all, and I think the people explaining it don't do a very good job, do they? I mean, I'm with you on that. But it's not who pays, it's how much are you paying. And that to me is the biggest bleep up on Obamacare. All they cared about is shifting who's paying around instead of figuring out how much are we paying. If a chemo to cost $1,000 is being charged 50, I don't care who pays for it, Jen, it's a problem. Am I right?
Right.
I mean, the idea that insurance should pay for it, you should pay for it, the government should pay for it, or just don't give the guy chemo, we never met him, let him die, that's a strategy too from some people. Not mine, not yours, but I mean, there's all kinds. The simple fact is, it shouldn't be 50 grand, right? If it was 5 grand, it wouldn't be a problem.
Well, are we talking, you know, price controls, wage controls?
I think something has to do with the patent laws.
Because, I mean, ostensibly, you know, the Medicare the typical Medicare Advantage plan is an intermediary that negotiates the coverage, and, you know, a balance is struck, sometimes an unbelievable balance. You know, how did it start out so big, and how did it get so small so fast? This is what I'm learning about, you know, Medicare billing. But if you legislate, you know, one price for all, you know, whatever, that's going to not just stop with medical care. I can guarantee you.
Jen, look at the issue. Why is the medical stuff so out of hand? It's out of hand because you've got a total abuse of the patent laws. You've had a massive combination in the industry against the Sherman Act, which you were just talking about. You have the real fly on top of the old ointment is that the people who demand what they want for that particular transaction don't pay for it. So for somebody, you know, you and I, okay, I don't know that we could pay out of pocket 50 grand for 10 chemo things. I'm not so sure we could do that. That's a lot of money. Maybe it's 10 or 20. Can we pay $1 million for something?
But even if we wanted to, we couldn't. We'd be evicted from our apartments,
yeah,
and we'd be starving.
So the question comes down to where do you start? Is it a question of maybe the government? And also is a problem with people that have, who gets to certify a hospital or a clinic? Well, you don't really want the other hospitals doing that. You don't really want the AMA doing it. I mean, what if the government were to say, look, if you put together these clinics, you know, for stitches, for things like that, and you want to charge a reasonable amount, we'll actually lend you the money for the building or something. I mean, the government shouldn't have to get involved in free enterprise to that extent, but they've allowed this disaster to happen. how exactly do you unwind it? I think it's a big problem, but somehow you got to start someplace, don't you?
Yeah, well, but you know, we've already seen what rationing of healthcare looks like, and we've experienced it since Obamacare.
It's always been rationed.
But I mean, now it's just, you know, a year to get in to see a specialist,
right?
Or, you know, or your doctor's here today and gone tomorrow. The movement of people in and out of these research institutions, and you know, I think the gradual lessening of skill level too because of it. Where I don't think there's any kind of institutional memory or advantage to going to a big teaching hospital for anything anymore, because the people there are, you know, just working their way around the system, and they're not making any long-term commitment emotionally or in terms of time to the patients or anybody else. So you're all just, you know, being milked dry in the process. I don't trust any aspect of the medical care system anymore, probably least of all the pharmaceuticals. But, you know, you it's that, what are you going to do? I'm not going to go to see a doctor. I'm not going to, you know.
A lot of people are in that loop right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we went for a while, but we went preventative medicine. Now you can't go see anybody for preventative medicine. I mean, I think you know, again, John, there's a sequence to this. Even though you and I might, going into it, we may not be able to put the solution together. If we were in the Oval Office, we would, I think, I would say, look, let's get some people that are somewhat rational from both sides of the aisle, if we can find that. Let's get some people in that industry. Let's get a couple of people from insurance to say, we need to define exactly what we're doing. We need to be able to ask somebody, hey, asshole, you're charging $50 for this pill. What does it actually cost you to make it? And we better get an answer. If he says, we got to send Jimmy down to wrestle the molar out of an alligator to get the stuff, and it costs us $500 a pill and we're only charging you $550, I can roll with that. But I doubt if that's what's happening. Do you?
So that's not happening at all.
So who's? I mean, we had Katie Ann talking about the research. If you and I donate, you know, $2 million to a place that's doing research on sickle cell anemia or something, whatever you know disease we're talking about, and all of a sudden the doctor there gets some money from government, and some people donate their time or don't make very much, like Katie, and they're working as interns, and all of a sudden, wow, we actually have a cure for something that's horrible, that or any other disease we want to name. Now what happens? The hospital or somebody takes all our work, they sell it to Merck. Merck gets a patent on the thing we just invested in, and they're going to charge every poor guy who's got or lady who's got sickle cell anemia, you know, for 4 years' pay for one dose. That's not my system, but it seems like it's this system, isn't it?
Well, and it's even worse than that, Tom. I think it's not just, you know, getting Merck in prime position to benefit from this, but it's making sure that nobody else treads on Merck's territory.
Yeah,
I think this includes industrial sabotage and everything else. I mean, you just go back and look at in the utilities industry. You know, you can look at these old film versions of the life of
John. That's five shows.
Alexander Graham Bell was all about making sure that you were the first one because you'd get the contract for New York City's lighting system, and XYZ would not. And they make it look like it's just, oh, we're going to work 24 hours a day to make sure that we're, you know, in first position here, and our product actually gets the contract. Well, that's dreamland. I mean,
that's about four shows worth of stuff. But no, I mean, if you don't, I think if you don't, I'll go back to, we got to go to break, and we got to get Nancy on. But it's like the MASH, you know, the old MASH show, MASH. If you walk in and a bone's sticking out of your leg, and the guy comes back and forth and keeps giving you some morphine, at some point, you have to say, hey, doc, I got a broken leg. Only then can you say, let's fix it, right? If you don't identify that it's broken, it's like this other stuff. We got to figure out what exactly is wrong and how do we recreate it. It's so far down. How do you, if one hospital's bought five other hospitals in the last year, how do you break them up? Do you want to break them up?
And close down a bunch of the process.
Yeah, it closed down a bunch of the process. So, I mean, it's SP Futures up 62, NASDAQ Futures up 346. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
We're back.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Jim Lawler on the board. S&P futures up 64. Yes, 64. NASDAQ futures up 348. So all the skirmishing in the Strait of Hormuz and around there over the weekend, I think really hasn't knocked anybody off the idea that we're working towards a solution here. I mean, maybe I'm hoping that, I'm believing it too, but I think there has been some progress, even though we seem to be bouncing back and forth a little bit. I think we're way better off than we were 3 weeks ago, and I think there is some progress, and hopefully I'm not wrong again. Dow futures up 244. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 107, so not so much there, 0.1%. Hang Seng, though, they're up pretty much, up 354, 1.6%. Shanghai up 46. Wait a minute. They're trading. Up 46, that's 1.1%. So China, good. Nikkei, not as much. Over in Europe, DAX up 38.1%. FTSE down 2, call that flat. Kekkonen down 46.5. So the U.S., as the actual news on the war is, U.S. and Iran have agreed to halt the hostilities that we've seen the last few days. So maybe this time it will actually work. Bonds, unchanged, 4.38. We have oil up 79 cents, 70.02. It's still, you know, relatively low compared to where it's been during this whole mess. But so 70, it's not like anybody's panicking for oil here this morning, so the oil part's pretty good. RBOB up 3 cents, 2.99. We'll say that in Orland and in Homer Glen, oil prices, they must have jacked somebody up after the first bombs hit the other day, because it was up 70 cents from last week. That's kind of crazy. RBOB's 2.99. So again, add somewhere between, I think, 45, 50 cents in Indiana, or less than that because there's no tax, and add like a dollar here because there's a lot of tax. So you're paying somewhere in the mid-threes, I would guess, here. Gold down 44 bucks, 4,052. Gold does not seem to be doing much. Silver down $1.15, 5806. One or two good days and right back the other way. Foreign exchange, dollar best month of the year, and it's one of the reasons why gold is down, is the dollar has been up. Euro is 114, British pound 132. They're both down probably 1.5% this month. Crypto, which has been getting its butt kicked, sneak back over 60,000, 60,241, up 865. Keep your eye on this MicroStrategy. They're up $5 today, but still 88.10. That's not looking good. There's a problem there. Maybe not. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, other sports?
Well, in traffic, we have the inbound Kennedy at 13 minutes. Obviously, we're on the holiday schedule. Inbound Edens, 27. Inbound Eisenhower at 25. The inbound Dan Ryan at 23. Real quick in the weather, it is 79 degrees with a high of 91. In Phoenix, we actually are hotter than Phoenix right now. They're at 76, but their high is going to be 103. In sports, Cubs win, Sox lose. And back to you, Chief.
The yesterday in the Cub game was interesting.
Yes, it was. Bottom of the 10th.
Yeah. Do we have Nancy?
Yeah. What happened on the Cubs game? I didn't hear about this.
Well, they were, Milwaukee, I think, probably is a better ball. They certainly have better pitching, but the Cubs have hung in there. It was tied going into the 10th, and the Cubs, the guy walks like, hits a guy and walks two guys. And then he walked the guy in, I think, and then one guy got a hit. So the Cubs are up 3. All of a sudden, those guys, extra innings, you start with the guy in second. So Yelich gets a hit, so now there's a guy in second. Then they walked a couple of guys, right, Jimmy? And
yeah, they had bases loaded, one
nobody
out.
Nobody out.
And they couldn't score.
Well, they were down 2 runs. They scored 1.
Right.
And so now they got bags loaded, 1 out. The guy had just walked the guy in. They brought in a pitcher who they just got from Iowa like an hour before. He's like the only guy they got left. So they put him in there. He walks the first guy, walks a run in. So now they're only down 1 with the bags loaded and nobody out. And I'm sitting there thinking, what do you suppose if you would have called FanDuel, what percentage chance you give the Cubs to win? 5? Maybe? With this guy can't find the plate? And I love the new, well, not new, he's been there a long time. Ryan Coomer, I think, is a terrific color man on the radio. And all of a sudden, after one guy walks, they walk in, the pitcher can't find the plate. The guy swings at the first pitch and pops one up the short left field in foul territory. And now it's bags loaded with 1 out. The guy in the batter's box is not very fast. He hits a hard one hopper to third. The Cubs turn a double play and end the game. So I'm listening to Coomer. He goes, what possessed that guy to swing at the first pitch after the pitcher just walked a guy in like 4 pitches? He goes, what is the matter with him? It changed the whole dynamic. Now all of a sudden, you got a guy up that if you can induce him into hitting a ground ball, he's not very fast, you can get out of this stuff, and that's exactly what happened. He goes, where do these guys learn how to think or something? I mean, it was absolutely unbelievable. The guy could have hit a home run. Who knows? But he didn't. But you know, why don't you at least give it a chance to, you know, when the guy can't find the plate, what are you doing? Just saying that. So you asked and I answered.
So did the Cubs win or lose?
They won. They won by 4-3, and the guys left 3 people on base.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, it's really something. The Sox, they lost yesterday by 1 run, but the Sox are playing well. They might win that division. That'd be nice.
That would be. Any Chicago team that wins, I'm for.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
City needs everything it can get.
You're not kidding.
Do you believe these guys might have a special session about the Bears? Just let them go. Just let them go.
Yeah.
If they want to go to...
Wait a minute. Wait. I didn't hear this. They're going to have a special session.
They're thinking
section.
About it.
Well, they should think fast.
Well, but if Indiana's dumb enough to give them $5 billion, knock yourself out.
Believe me,
knock yourself out. I mean, whatever. So, Nance, what's going on in your world?
Whatever. This is football. This is everything.
It's everything. Well, it's become a studio game, Nance. You don't care where they play, do you?
No. I hate to see him leave, but just for the tradition of it. But, I mean, like you're saying, if somebody wants to spend that kind of money.
I just, you know, I mean, as a guy who's played sports my whole life, and I sure wish I could play like I used to be able to, this whole idea of the pro sports doing what they're doing, the NFL thinking that they're, you know, essentially God's league, they think they have antitrust exemption, and they don't. And I see what's happening in college, and John and our bestest of friends are still all over that somehow, you know, Notre Dame is gonna maintain above the board when it drives its way into full professionalism. I don't care about any of these people. I mean, our guys were all this weekend. We're talking about how many people we've got coming in for, signing up for football and how we're this great team and stuff. If they're there 2 years and somebody else offers them more money, they're gone. They're not students like we were. Not to say there was always, they always were treated a little bit better. I understand that. But this whole idea that, you know, you're there for 2 years and off you go and all this money's being spent to get you there. Same thing with the pros. I mean, if they want to be like that, if they want to be on, or I can't watch a game on Thursday night because I got to pay this place and that place, if they want to go, to just leave me behind, Nance. I mean, let me hang around, I'll go do something else. You know, maybe I'll go bowling or something. I don't know. But, I mean, at some point, it reaches where you just turn people off. And I'm kind of getting to that stage. Maybe just I'm old and grumpy or whatever. But what do you think? Nance, you're more of a fan than me.
You know what? I like to see a good game. So
I do too.
If you can put together a team that really plays good football, getting to the back to the baseball thing, I mean, they defied all good, any kind of good baseball rule there is. I mean, you got all this going on, right? Why would the guy swing at the first pitch? That's nuts, right?
Yeah.
But so when you start defying the rules that even, like, I would know, this is Decker. But Notre Dame is special because it has this legend of creating good football, all right? And now you're saying it's turning into just a money proposition game. And everybody, you know, they need to get on a team. They need to play well so they can, you know, transfer out. And I don't blame them for creating the portal. I think that was good because some people get pigeonholed, right? But there's good and bad in everything, and unfortunately, this is really sad. I mean, part of the reason people go to Notre Dame is for the tradition, right? I mean,
it used to be all
of it.
But right now, the players are professional players, and we refuse to admit that. There's still going to be a lot of people that go and take advantage of the education and all those other kinds of things and be real students. But, you know, other than that, I mean, but then you see people that are in their fourth school in their fourth year. I mean, what are we trying to do? Have they ever even been to class? If it's going to be a professional, you know, just like in Boardwalk Empire, you can't be half a gangster. I mean, you can't be half a pro.
Somebody told me the other day, his son does very well at football, and the gentleman told me that he could graduate or he could, you know, stay on and just take more classes because he's qualified for more years. And I said, so he explained it to me, and I said, oh, my God. And he said he's going to graduate. Now, I don't think you should be able to stay on for these years and just take classes so you can play.
But on the other side of the coin, if you decide you're a terrific ladies basketball player. Okay, you go and you play your 4 years, then you go to law school in Notre Dame, or you go to business school. You're in college. Why can't you play?
But he wasn't. He did not explain it to me that way. He explained.
Well, I'm saying, it depends on how you look at it, right? Why can't you play?
Well, he wasn't. He's not. All he's doing, they're just staying in school. Period. They're not.
If he has a year left, he could graduate. He could be admitted to the business school, and he can play. He's a grad student.
What do you mean by that?
If he has his, now we just went to 5 years eligibility, right, John? But say he had a year of eligibility left, and he graduated, he can go to law school for a year and play.
I think they'd have to dumb down the graduate programs quite a bit.
Well, for some of them, yeah, but not everybody.
Just for the time commitment, if nothing else.
Yeah, the time commitment. I mean, it's a. But yeah, you have a certain amount, and a lot of people have already graduated or planned. They're supposed to be in grad school. As a matter of fact, Nance, the reason why you could transfer as a grad student, the original rule was you could only transfer if the school you're transferring to had a graduate major that your current school doesn't have. Name me a graduate major that Wisconsin or Michigan or Illinois doesn't have. I mean, really?
I didn't realize this is the way he explained it, but
yeah, I mean he could, just because you graduate, if you got a year left, doesn't mean you got to be in school doing something. What he's saying is a kid doesn't want to go to grad school, or John says can't get in, so he's going to take more. I mean, you could, I suppose, John, if you were an engineering major and you had enough credits to graduate as an engineer, you could hack around for another semester and take, you know, economics courses and get a double major or something, couldn't you?
Yeah.
You don't have to
affect the accreditation prospects for a lot of these graduate programs, though.
I think you got more chance of these guys going to class than wanting to go to too many, Nance. Wanting to go to too many, I don't think is a system-wide problem.
I don't know. When we grew up, we didn't have these opportunities. We didn't play all these games. We went. We tried to be the best we could be. And I just can't imagine people wanting to do this kind of stuff. I'm just naive, I guess.
Well, Nance, if you, let's put it this way. If you, as a ladies basketball player, could possibly make $1.5 million as a sophomore in college, I'm going to say Papa Nancy might have had a basketball hoop in the backyard. Look at the difference between when John and I went to school. It was $3,500 for the tuition. Now the tuition is $80. And oh, by the way, if you're on a team, you're getting paid. Look at the difference. We're not even talking Mars to here. We're talking Pluto to here. I mean, the difference is absolutely dramatic. So now the kids are essentially now in high school. There's people like one of my buddies is one of the major Catholic schools. He's actually his last meeting as chairman of the board is like next month, I think. But he's been there for forever. He said, if you think your kid's any good, the first question people ask when you come to the school is, I think my kid's going to be a great football or basketball player. If he is, can he graduate after at Christmas his senior year? Because the colleges want you to come and they want you to be able to play as a freshman, but they want you to do a spring practice. Imagine anybody asking that at Mount Carmel or Marist when we went to school, Jen?
Impossible.
They would have said, "The Brother Rock would have said, I don't think your Marist material can tell out of here. What do you mean you want to graduate 6 months before everybody else? Get out of here. You haven't even gotten a grade yet, you idiot.
You haven't gotten a grade. Well, I mean, this is just so sad. It just never used. Things weren't like this. They were much more simpler, weren't they?
Well, they were simpler, but now look at the cash. I mean, how do you have your football coach making $10 million, and you can't play to players that are knocking themselves. I mean, there's a million sides to this coin, man. And I go back to, you know, if John would have been a little more active when he was younger, I was involved in Notre Dame Club of Chicago because Tom Tully was really involved and so forth. So we, after the thing was over, we would of course go out and find some saloon that was open till 2, and Tom knew all these old time Notre Dame guys. And one night we're sitting there at Ziggy Zarapsky, and Ziggy's one of these guys that absolutely carried the room. If he was there, he was just a great story.
Mount Carmel grad. I went to school with Ziggy's nephew.
Really? He's
all
a great guy.
All through grade school and Mount Carmel.
Nance, you've seen this guy. He's maybe 6'1". His shoulders, he had to like turn. You'd sit there and look at him, even when he was like 70 years old, you'd say, how did somebody get by this guy? He was a wall. Well, his buddy, George Conner. George Conner is in National Football Hall of Fame, I believe. And he was on the Bears. And Notre Dame, he played for Holy Cross, went in the Navy, I believe. Got recruited by Leahy to come to Notre Dame after he came out of the Navy. And then he went to the Bears. And George sitting there talking to him, a real nice guy. Matter of fact, I know his son. His son's a terrific guy, too. And he says to me, you know, Tommy, how many surgeries do you think I've had since I left football? And I said, George, I have no idea. And he goes, I think he said 22 or 25. He goes, not one of them paid for by Notre Dame or the Bears. So the fact that people want to get some money for beating their head against the wall, Nance, I mean, it's there's so much money there. I mean, when John and I were in school, I think Eric Parsegian made, what do you make, John, 50 grand a year?
Probably
something like that, and
he's well paid.
Yeah,
that was big money back then.
And the schools were restricted to 2 national games a year, so the Irish were always very popular. So one of the games was always Southern Cal, and there was a game earlier, either Michigan or somebody. But you could only be on Channel 7. You know, was the football channel before there was cable. You could only be on twice a year, so there was no real money. When the Irish went my freshman year, they hadn't gone to a bowl game in, 40 years or something, Jen? They decided to go to Cotton Bowl. It wasn't our friend. It was our senior year in high school. They went to the Cotton Bowl, and the only reason why they justified it their take was $300,000, and they applied it. They decided that Notre Dame didn't have any minorities, which they had a few, but not very many. They were going to apply the $300,000 to minority scout. Nance, can you imagine that? Your total take from a bowl game where your number one is playing number three was $300,000. That's all he got.
Back then, it was a lot of money.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't enough for every player to be making $1 million.
No, oh my God, no.
So, Nance, what's going on in your world? We talk about you all the time when you're not here. Regarding, I went through the whole mess. I'm not going to do it again about inflation rates in the last 6 years versus money supply versus what people are making. And I have to believe at the front load of the bottom line was, I've got regular inflation is up 28, they admit to. Wages and salaries are up 21 or 22. Money supply is up 48. I have to believe since 2020, housing prices, if they doubled, are they up about 80% since 2020?
Well, here they're up. I mean, the average starting home last week, according to the MLS, was is now 380. To me, that's a huge number. When I first started, it was in 2000. I think it was 170, 160.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big number. That's a huge number. So, in 26 years, it's gone up by $200,000.
Well, I'm going to say here, I'll find it. Let's see. Healthcare costs now, college. Someone, you guys talk. I'll find it here on our page what the housing price was in 2000 versus today. And I'm going to say it's a...
Numbers, huge difference, I'm sure.
Here, let's see, where are we here?
John should know. Come on, John, come through.
Well, go ahead, John, talk. I got everyone here but housing now. Why am I doing that? Oh, here we go. Median new home in 2000, not 2020, was 164, and now it's 411.
See, I was right on it.
So I'm
but gonna, I don't agree with today. 411 is high. I would agree with the 380. 370.
Well, this is median, so median's in the middle. Okay. Let me see if I can find a 2020 number here. I'll try. You guys. So,
well, that was during COVID, so God only knows what the heck was going on then. Not too much.
But what are you, in terms of the health of the people buying, is it still mostly cash deals or what is it?
Or no, well, it's either way. You know, I mean, kids, if it's a new-time homebuyer, no. If it's older generation, yes. So it's hard to say. It's hard to say. It's very hard to say. I know someone who put their house up for sale in St. John. They're coming back to Chicago. And it went on the market. I gave the okay for it to go on the market Thursday afternoon. Friday they got a full price cash offer. So I mean it just, but see, it's older people. The older people live in the on the block, and they want their daughter to be close by with her kids because they're the babysitters and all that, and they're actually using their house as the line of credit from their house to buy the house down the block. So yes, it's a cash deal for the seller, but it's not a cash deal really. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't know what cash deal really means anymore.
But they're they have enough equity though, essentially.
Yeah. Their house was paid off and that's just how they did it. And I don't blame them because of the proximity of what they're trying to do.
Nancy, do you see underwriters being more careful and scrutinizing deals for things like family money being, given to somebody to buy a house, or like gift letters, to make sure that there's no expectation of repayment for, say, money from your father or mother?
No, they don't care. Families are actually, I think, easier. That's the only gift letter you can give now, is if it's a relative. Mm-hmm. Or somehow, I mean, you have to explain who this person is, and related is one thing, but non-related doesn't even fly anymore. So I see the underwriting, looking at it from 100,000 different ways. I mean, it's everybody's being scrutinized. No one is being singled out. They're not singling out one class, one group, one part of it, like the gifts. That's not it. There are so many. In other words, Fannie and Freddie basically buy most of the loans of or FHA or VA. I mean, that's just the way it goes. But the servicers now, like, so the people who actually, you know, collect the money, they have their own overlays because they don't want to get stuck with these properties. So that's where the rules can vary a little bit, but that's where I see the variance. So you have to be careful where you're placing somebody. But they're underwriting and scrutinizing like you would not believe. No one is going to lose their job because you can't explain away something.
Why is it their business?
Why is it their business?
Yeah.
You mean the servicers?
Well, I'm saying when Matty Weber bought his house, he said, you know, he did was he called me up, chief. You can believe it, these bleeps. Some of them, his mother gave him some dough, and he had to sign an affidavit that it wasn't a loan, didn't have to pay her back. She had to sign the affidavit, and somebody else had to sign it. They didn't give him any money. When you could open up a brokerage account tomorrow and want to buy 1,000 shares of Microsoft, which would be $380,000. If you send in, you know, 190 to your account, nobody gives a crap where you got the money from. All of a sudden, mm-hmm. they'll lend you 180 sight unseen, 190.
Okay, that's because that happens because they have to make sure that everybody's got to go with the loan to debt to income level. And if someone gives you the money, they have to make sure you have to sign that you're not gonna, it's not a loan, because if they have to pay back, that you're automatically out. So that's what that's about. That's been going on since, I would say 2004.
That's Dodd-Frank.
2005. That's been a long time. They should have, whoever did the loan with, by the way, was not me. That would have been all up front. I mean, I just tell you all that up front. But it's not like they used to make, let's say it was his mother giving him the money, okay? Then his mother would have to submit 2 months of bank statements. They're not making you do that anymore. Showing that she had the money and wasn't borrowing it from somebody. You know what I mean? Like the chain. Yeah.
What does somebody care if she's borrowing it?
Because they want to make sure that it's her money and not money laundering. See, it doesn't really have to do with the loan.
But I guess I'm saying...
But there's these other underlying rules that we have to follow now.
But I'm saying this is one of the reasons why Hal is putting together this big study that he just submitted to Auburn. And if you look at the increase in the money supply, the money pouring into the system, it's not that it's just pouring in there where everybody gets to use it. He said if you combine the craziness of the increase in the money supply with the new banking laws, I mean, you keep saying they, and I'm not accusing you of anything, but who's the they? I mean, who decides that somebody's mother has to do sign? What do they care if she doesn't pay her friend back down the block?
I mean, they're just looking for money laundering, Tom. That's really where it's going.
I mean, I don't...
They might not care. They may not care, but they want to know where the source of this money comes from, and they want to make sure it's not money laundering. Okay. So maybe they would get into how the person down the block got it.
I'm not trying to be... I know it's not sounding like it. I'm not trying to be critical. What I'm trying to do is say it's very uneven. Do you think that when SpaceX, Musk had to put a piece of paper one, or where he got the dough? I mean,
he's not asking. I don't know where he's asking to borrow his money from.
Well, I mean, they just went out and bought. They just borrowed $20 billion last week, right, Jen?
Yeah.
Yeah, but those are rules. Your mortgage rules are different than lending for mortgages. Those rules are made up by the government, and then they're the same for everybody. Now, Musk borrowing $20 billion, what did he have to put up for collateral? I have no idea.
Well, and that's what Hal's talking about, is the unevenness of this. And that's why, in his opinion, why you see the stock market racing up the way that it is because anybody can borrow whatever they want. with, you know,
and that may be, but that may be, but for the average person, that is not true.
Right. Well, that's exactly what he's talking about. You hit the nail right on the head. That's what he's talking about. It's not even. So, you know, well, why somebody should care whether somebody's mother borrowed the dough. You just get a bunch of bureaucrats together. All they want to do is find out about everything about everybody, right? I mean, when I got my mortgage, you could get a loan from the guy you bought the place from, right?
You can still do that.
Yeah.
You can still do that.
But you have a mortgage and it's disclosed.
Yeah. Well,
right, right. You can still do that. Yeah. So, my husband's son, he just didn't qualify, and I went and told the guy that. I said, he's just not going to qualify. I told him why. And he said, you know what? He said, I give you a lot of respect for coming down here. He said, I give you, you know, he said, I am just so impressed that you just ring the doorbell and say, hey, this is the way it is. We want the kid to get the house, but sorry. And he said, you know what? I can finance it myself for him. I almost fell over.
Well, a lot of used car dealers do that.
And so he just self-financed it myself, drew up a mortgage, he signed it, and I think within maybe a year and a half, we had, you know, we got him a regular mortgage and got the guy's money back. And he called me and said, you don't have to do this. But, I mean, I felt it was better for him. And that was it.
It's nice if somebody can wait for their money. They don't need it all at once.
Well, but he had to make them payments every month, just like a mortgage. And the guy was thrilled, and the guy was happy. I mean, it worked out for everybody. But, yeah, you can privately finance. It's not a big deal. But the unevenness this man's talking about versus the mortgage, you know, a mortgage thing, the unevenness, I think, is because, you know, Musk has a lot of assets and somebody felt it was worth the risk. Commercial lending is the same way. Musk, you know, commercial lending rules are totally different than mortgage lending
rules. Well, that's Hal's whole point. Do they really need to be that? I mean, if somebody can borrow for a stock in an instant, why does it take you 6 months and your wife's second born and your house to get $100,000 for a plumbing company that's never missed a payment? I mean, is the unevenness causing problems in the economy? And his point is the answer is yes.
Yes. Well, and that could be, but that's a whole different
yeah.
Question and line of thinking than the
average guy. So, Nance, give us a shame. We're running over. Give us a shameless plug and your phone number. And how would you make it? How do you think John would do as a car repossessor?
Well, it depends if he'd show what time he would show up, Tom.
Oh yeah,
3 years after the fact, that's not going to work.
That'd be perfect for a car repossessor.
Did you ever talk to your friend Audrey about her career as a repossessor?
No.
Well, so I
don't care if we're going over. You have to tell me about this.
She worked for this company it wasn't Hertz, but it was somebody. It was a brand name. She worked for a place that rented cars. If the people didn't bring the car back, the people who worked there, she, like a couple of guys, he had to go out and grab the car.
Oh, my God.
I go, you got to be kidding me.
You want to hear something really crazy?
So one night the guy comes running out with a club or something.
Well, wouldn't you? I mean, you think your car's being stolen.
But it wasn't his car. It was a rental car.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
To him, it's his wheels. It's his ride. So it's being stolen, right? God,
can you imagine renting a Hertz for like 2 days and not bringing it back and having somebody come and repossess it out of your driveway? Why would you think that it was yours?
You want to hear something
yeah.
nuts? I have a client who passed away in Wisconsin. And the children have called the place and said, my father passed away. We please pick up the car. Okay. And this has been going on for 18 months.
Where's
they
the car?
They have the death certificate in the guy's house. And so it finally got, they finally got it off the driveway and moved it to the street. And now it's being ticketed by the city for being in the street. It's a nightmare. These kids cannot get rid of the car. They won't pick it up, and yet the the people who have the loan, which I think is Ally, have never gone to pick up the car. I don't even understand it. I'd be on the phone with the president of the place. I would have shipped it to him by now in a crate.
Well, if the car is nice, maybe we'll grab it.
I doubt it's nice. I don't think it's running right, and that's one of the reasons the kids don't know what to do either.
Well, you send the hook.
What's the hook?
The tow truck. Big hook. And then away you go.
But take it away to where?
John will know. Call Victory. They're out of business.
Be the mechanic down the street. Right?
Yeah, the mechanic down the street. Get the thing running.
But they don't, the car, they owe money on the car. They're not making the car payments for their father who passed away 18 months ago.
Really?
I don't understand.
That's a no-brainer for the finance company.
Yeah, you would think.
I know. I don't understand this at all. I don't get it. And I'll call the girl like once every couple months and say, well, did they pick up the car yet? And she's like, no, I'm so frustrated.
This is like more, it's like incompetency more than it is anything else. It's almost funny. So we got a 3-day weekend. No show Friday, by the way, because the 4th of July would be on a Saturday. So the holiday's Friday this year. And I assume next year, with it being on the Sunday, the holiday will be Monday, right? I would
correct.
Think. So hopefully I will see you two lovely creatures this weekend at some point. SP Futures up 63.
So. All right, we'll talk
to 352. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.